Welcome to the Dope Dive. This is where we sift through really fascinating sources and pull out those potent nuggets of knowledge and insight just for you. Today, we're taking a deep plunge into the remarkable world of Tina Fey, and we're using her fantastic best-selling memoir, Bossy Pants, as our guide. So our mission today really is to explore how Fey, with her, you know, razor-sharp wit and just undeniable talent, navigated and, let's be honest, conquered the traditionally male-dominated world of comedy. We want to unpack how she managed to turn perceived weaknesses into these incredible strengths, and in doing so, offered up like a treasure trove of practical wisdom. Stuff anyone can use when facing professional or even personal hurdles. Get ready for some genuinely surprising facts and plenty of those aha moments.
Oh, absolutely. And it's quite a journey she maps out. Tina Fey, she isn't just a comedian, right? She's genuinely a trailblazer. Her impact is huge. Think about it. First female head writer for Saturday Night Live, and she was just 29. Then the creative force behind 30 Rock, Mean Girls. Her work has, without a doubt, redefine modern comedy. Mm. So this deep dive, I think, will really illuminate her unique blend of wit, sharp insight, and that sort of pioneering spirit that makes her story just so relevant and, frankly, inspiring today.
Okay, so to really get a handle on her impact, we need to start at the beginning, right? Where'd this journey kick off? Let's go back to Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. What were those early influences? She's famously described herself as a super nerd, you know, smart, a bit awkward, completely obsessed with comedy.
Yeah, and what's truly fascinating there is how those early experiences really built the foundation for her incredible resilience and her perspective later on. She talks very openly about a childhood injury, the one that left her with a facial scar. But she doesn't dwell on it as, like, trauma. Instead, she uses it to illustrate something powerful, which is how these things we perceive as differences or even flaws can actually become sources of unique strength. It's a core idea in Bossy Pants. Embracing your whole self, right? Mm. Imperfections included. And it's not just about self-acceptance. It's about how those specific, maybe awkward parts of you, they can become your unique fingerprint, creatively speaking.
Mm-hmm. And you can also clearly see the influence of her family. Supportive, but also, as she puts it, wonderfully quirky. Greek-American roots. Her father, Don Fey, sounds like he instilled this quiet dignity, this really strong work ethic. She calls it the Don Fey work ethic.
Right.
And then her mother nurtured that creative, expressive side. So you get this mix, right? This blend of influences that definitely fed into her unique worldview and later her comedy.
Exactly. And if you connect that forward, you see how this strong, authentic foundation, just let her be herself unapologetically. Then comes this really pivotal move, Chicago. The legendary Second City improv scene. And that's where she really absorbed the first rule of improvisation, which is simple but profound. Agree. Always agree. Say yes.
Yeah.
It's about accepting what your scene partner gives you, no matter how wild it seems. Building on it.
Yeah, and she really took that principle and ran with it, didn't she? She learned not just to say yes, but say yes and in. And this isn't just like a rule for getting laughs on stage. It's bigger. It's a model for collaboration, for problem solving, even personal growth. It's a whole philosophy, really, building things up, adding, not blocking, or just shooting ideas down. So think about that for you listening. How often are we quick to say no or yeah, but? What could happen if you started with yes and more often?
It's really the opposite of cynicism, isn't it? It creates this space where ideas, even weird ones, can actually grow. And that's a lesson she absolutely carried with her into the, the pressure cooker of Saturday Night Live.
Okay, so she masters yes and at Second City. How did that philosophy or, you know, other lessons from improv really prepare her for SNL? Because that environment sounds intense. Joining as a writer in 97. Wow.
Intense is putting it mildly. She paints this really vivid, sometimes kind of horrifying picture of the culture there. Grueling, competitive, often just plain bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, the all-night writing sessions fueled by stress, caffeine, the constant pressure to get a sketch on air or seeing something you worked all night on just get cut. But what's really crucial to grasp is her experience, not just as a writer there, but specifically as a woman writer in what was, let's face it, an overwhelmingly male environment. She talks about being one of very few women navigating what was essentially a classic boys club.
And not always subtle sexism either, right? She mentions both the overt stuff and the more underlying things. Like that story about the mason jar, it's funny, but also infuriating. Having to use a jar because the men's room was closer and the women's was like inaccessible or even used for storage. It wasn't just inconvenient. It was such a symbol, wasn't it? Of how women's presence, their needs were kind of an afterthought. It really highlights those systemic issues, even in places you'd think might be more progressive, like a creative environment.
Right. Which brings up a really interesting question. How do you handle that?
Yeah.
How do you survive, let alone thrive in that kind of place without you know, losing your voice or just giving up. And this is where you see Faye's really distinct, what she calls pragmatic feminism, emerge. It wasn't about picking every single fight. It was more about this laser focus on being undeniably competent, on doing the work relentlessly. She strategized. She earned respect through the sheer quality and quantity of her writing. And she chose her battles, the ones that could lead to actual systemic change from within, rather than, say, burning out on every little slight.
That makes sense. Though I guess some might argue, you know, does not confronting every single instance let it continue? How do you balance your own progress with pushing for broader change?
That's the tightrope, isn't it? And Faye's approach, at least as she presents it in the book, seems to be: secure your position first, earn the power, prove you're indispensable, then use that leverage to make changes. Her strategy feels like it was about long-term impact over maybe more performative gestures in the moment. When she was in charge, she could change hiring practices, shift the culture, power she might not have gained if she'd, you know, fought every single microaggression on the way up.
And clearly that strategy worked for her. I mean, by 1999, she breaks through, becomes SNL's first female head writer at just 29. That role must have forced her to develop some serious leadership chops, right? Managing all those creative egos, making tough calls under pressure, taking ultimate responsibility for the show.
Absolutely. And then her journey takes another big turn. She moves from behind the scenes to being very much on screen, co-anchoring Weekend Update, which brought a whole new set of challenges. Suddenly, she's facing Hollywood's intense scrutiny, especially around women's appearances.
Mm.
You know, the constant pressure to look a certain way, be camera ready, a world away from the relative anonymity of the writer's room.
Right. And it was around then, wasn't it, that Jimmy Fallon, her co-anchor, gave her that piece of advice: you're not a woman in comedy, you're a comedian.
Mm.
That's such a powerful line. It's urging her, and maybe by extension, us, you know, the listener, to focus on the skill, the talent, not just the label. Let the work speak for itself. Okay, so after this incredible groundbreaking time at SNL, Tina Fey doesn't slow down. She goes on to create 30 Rock for NBC in 2006, critically acclaimed.
Yeah, and 30 Rock was so clearly heavily inspired by her time at SNL, wasn't it? Her character, Liz Lemon, she became this, like, exaggerated but also incredibly relatable self-portrait. You know, that capable but perpetually stressed out woman trying to manage a completely chaotic workplace. The book really dives into that constant struggle, that kind of nail-biting effort to keep the show on air. It was critically loved, but always fighting for ratings. She talks about battling network execs, constantly having to reinvent things, just navigating the crazy high-stakes world of TV production. It sounds like she felt she was fighting on multiple fronts a lot of the time.
But maybe, just maybe, the moment she became most globally recognized wasn't even Liz Lemon. It was 2008, right? Her Emmy-winning impersonation of Sarah Palin.
Oh, that was something else entirely. Truly surreal, as she describes it. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, her comedy wasn't just entertainment. It was a huge part of the national political conversation. Unavoidable, really.
Mm-hmm.
She breaks down in the book how that impersonation even happened. The incredible public pressure to get it exactly right. And navigating that super delicate line. You know, the line between insightful impersonation and just mean-spirited caricature. And the implications there, they go way beyond just comedy, don't they? It's this powerful case study in how satire can both reflect culture and maybe even shape it a little. It highlights the huge responsibility that comes with having that kind of public platform. A comedian genuinely influencing public discourse. Mm-hmm. That's pretty rare and potent.
So tracing that path, Upper Darby, Second City, SNL, 30 Rock, Palin, it's so clear the wisdom in Bossy Pants isn't just like theory she came up with. It was forged in the fire of those experiences. So let's really distill those core philosophies now. What are the big takeaways for us? First, she absolutely champions authenticity as a professional strategy.
You know, what's really illuminating about that is her argument that trying to be someone else, it's not just exhausting, it's ultimately ineffective. It doesn't work. She shows through these specific, often really funny personal stories, how embracing her own quirks, her super nerd thing, her specific brand of humor, even her insecurities, actually became advantages professionally. It let her create characters like Liz Lemon, write sketches that landed because they were uniquely her. And she has that famous line, right? That characteristic bluntness: I don't care if you like it. Which sounds harsh, maybe, but it highlights the power of just standing behind your work, not needing everyone to approve. That conviction coming from an authentic place, it's kind of magnetic.
Mm-hmm. And secondly, she just completely dismantles that myth of, like, effortless creative genius, the idea that some people are just born with it. Instead, she really emphasizes the unglamorous reality of sheer hard work and preparation. It's not just about natural talent, though she clearly has tons. It's about the 80-hour work week she put in, the sleepless nights writing, that relentless dedication to the craft. She has that great water slide analogy. You can't be that kid standing at the top of the water slide overthinking it. You have to go down the chute.
It's such a great call to action, right? For anyone just stuck overthinking, waiting for things to be perfect before you start, just go.
Totally. And it really pushes back against this modern idea that you can find shortcuts or that success just happens overnight. Her journey just hammers home that sustained effort, often really brutal effort, and truly mastering the fundamentals, those are crucial. And speaking of challenges, she offers some incredibly pragmatic, sometimes almost counterintuitive advice on navigating sexism in the workplace. Yes. This part is so powerful and, frankly, actionable for you, the listener, because it's just so direct. Her strategy, basically. When faced with sexism, ask yourself, is this person actually standing between me and what I want to do? If the answer is no, ignore it. Move on. Your energy, she says, is better used doing your work and just outpacing people that way. Then, when you are in charge, don't hire the jerky people.
Yeah.
So what does that really mean for you, for where you put your focus when you hit those obstacles at work?
Well, it's about prioritizing, isn't it? Choosing your battles.
Yeah.
Conserving your most valuable resource, which is your energy. Focusing it where it's going to have the most impact on your long-term goals, your career, instead of getting bogged down fighting every single frustrating thing. And she also tackles very candidly the myth of having it all. You know, as this super successful showrunner, writer, star, and a mother, she doesn't present some glossy picture. She shows the chaotic, often really messy reality of juggling those huge professional responsibilities with the relentless demands of motherhood.
Yeah, she's so refreshing on that. Instead of offering these neat, tidy solutions, she's just honest. Honest about the guilt, the exhaustion, the sheer absurdity sometimes that makes it so relatable, especially for working parents. That piece, A Mother's Prayer for Its Daughter, hilarious, but also cuts deep. She doesn't pretend it's perfect. She shows you the real deal.
Exactly. And stepping back, that's incredibly empowering, I think. Faye basically gives us permission to just acknowledge the messiness, to laugh at the absurd parts of life.
Yeah.
And to find strength and integrity in our authentic selves, rather than constantly chasing some impossible airbrushed ideal. She also uses her own experiences, you know, being in the public eye, to tackle body image and self-acceptance. She humorously pulls back the curtain on all the artifice behind celebrity glamour and really encourages readers to embrace their whole selves, perceived imperfections and all.
Okay, so we've absorbed all these really profound insights from Tina Fey's Bossy Pants. How can you, listening now, actually apply these lessons? Let's make it practical. So, for professional communication and leadership, for example, why not try implementing that yes and principle in your next brainstorming session, maybe, or team meetings, and really take her advice on decisive leadership to heart. Be clear, set consistent standards, focus on the work, the vision, not just on whether everyone likes you all the time.
Yeah, her journey is such a great example that effective leadership doesn't have to look one specific way, you know, often that traditional masculine mold. It's about finding an authentic style that works for you. And, crucially, about protecting your team, shielding them from unproductive noise so they can do their best work.
Right. And then for building creative confidence and resilience, remember Faye's whole thing about preparation, plus that willingness to just jump in, take the leap. She said, I was a little excited, but mostly terrified, which I think is the right reaction to most important things. That's brilliant. So take those calculated risks. Actively ask for feedback. And this is key. Treat failures not like the end of the world, but as, okay, what can I learn here? Invaluable data.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to navigating workplace relationships, her experiences really shine a light on the power of female solidarity, something maybe underestimated sometimes. Instead of buying into those competitive narratives, choose collaboration. Actively support other women. Build genuine professional connections that actually lift everybody up.
Absolutely. And finally, maybe most importantly, for anyone out there who's ever been called bossy, Faye's entire book is basically a reframe of that word. Just understanding that bossy is so often just a negative, dismissive way to describe effective female leadership. That understanding alone can empower you to wear that label differently, not as criticism, but maybe, yeah, as a badge of pride.
Which really brings up a critical question for all of us, doesn't it? How can we, like, collectively challenge and reframe these labels, not just for ourselves, but for the people around us? How do we actively work to create more inclusive, more equitable environments where leadership is just leadership, regardless of gender? It's an ongoing conversation, starting with just being aware.
Yeah. Ultimately, Tina Fey's Bossy Pants teaches us that, you know, real professional success, it doesn't require you to abandon who you are or to desperately try and fit into someone else's mold of how you should be. It's about harnessing your unique intelligence, your unique perspective, working smarter and, yeah, often harder than anyone else, using humor sometimes as a weapon, sometimes as a shield, and just fiercely embracing your authenticity, being called bossy. Maybe it is just the dismissive term for strong, capable female leadership, and maybe it is a label to wear with conviction.
I think the most valuable lesson, maybe, is that the journey itself, the messy, imperfect, often completely absurd journey, is actually way more important and definitely more interesting and fulfilling than chasing some mythical finish line of having it all.
Mm.
It's about making conscious choices along the way, understanding your limits, and finding the joy in the process, not just fixating on the outcome.
So let's leave you with a provocative thought to carry forward. That concept of bossy, or maybe demanding, it still persists, right? And it's still disproportionately applied to women who challenge norms or assert their leadership. So how can you start identifying those instances, maybe in your own life, your workplace, and what small, maybe pragmatic steps, face style, could you take, either to reframe that narrative yourself or maybe empower others around you to do the same? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Tina Fey's Bossy Pants. We really hope this conversation gave you some valuable nuggets to chew on, maybe apply. We'll be back soon with another deep dive into more fascinating topics, custom tailored just for you.